And welcome to Vancouver, to the Pedal Revolutionary Radio Show. Here we are at the wonderful campus. It's a sunny, sort of sunny day. The rains are over. Congratulations, everyone, for surviving another winter. And, can I use this one? Here, let me get over here. Oh, that's a little bit better. Welcome to the high-tech equipment of University Radio. Today's show, we're going to kind of continue on in the guess what, the climate is changing vein that we've been doing recently. So kudos to everybody who is at least trying to, if we can't reverse the damage, not further it so much. Today we have an old friend with us. Hi, Conrad.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here today, Ifni.
Excellent. How you been?
Good. I'm glad that summer has finally arrived, and with no more rain. That's a big improvement.
Yeah, exactly. And what have you been up to? I know you've been real busy. You had a couple films come out.
Yeah, I had the Five Ring Circus out a little while ago, and that was really exciting. It was quite an intense movie to make and then to put out there on the big screen, and it's been well received. A lot of incredible reviews. And it's doing well. The movie is definitely a shaker, and I'm proud of it.
Excellent. So is it going to be coming out anywhere soon for people to check out?
In Vancouver, you can get it at... it's on DVD. You can get it at Spartacus. You can get it at Co-op. You can get it at our community bikes. You can get it at a lot of the small stores.
Cool. And that would be Spartacus Books, not the gym. I think most of our listeners get enough exercise as it is. Cool. Well, listen, thank you for stopping by. And I know we do have another reason that you're here. And that has to do with the upcoming kind of Earth Day festivities that are happening, and also the Step It Up kind of day of action that's rather international.
Yeah, the Workless Party is having a party on April 21st. And as many people know, we throw the craziest, wildest parties known to man or womankind. We've got one of the best lineups we've ever had. We've got the Shoot Horses, Don't They? We've got the Kitchen. We've got the Carnival Band. We got Timothy Wisdom. We've got Tarun Teaspoon the Masala Mixer. We've got an $800 body painting competition. We've got a spanking booth and a kissing booth. And I hear Ifni is helping out with the spanking booth.
Me? Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I dole out punishment on a daily basis, but maybe I'll make a special appearance.
Yeah, it's a costume party, and there'll be prizes for whoever comes in the best costume. And the goal is to have an insane amount of fun. And we always try and have the best party ever.
Mm. What are you going to dress up as?
Oh, that's going to be a surprise. There's always... Okay, my favorite is a Berlin hooker.
Oh, wow. What's the difference? What makes it a Berlin incarnation?
It's a different style.
Of the goddess of
it's
sexuality.
It's a different style.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. I was just talking to someone from Berlin today. We were talking about the Berliner donut. Because we're talking about Voodoo Donuts, which is a vegan donut shop in Portland that we would love to have come up to Vancouver. We can only... think about it from afar. Excellent. Thank you, Conrad, for bringing us up to speed. I guess if people want to find out more information, or if they forget what the heck you were talking about, they can go to the Workless Party website, which is worklessparty.org. And just briefly, some of the other... We're going to have some other speakers that you're appearing with, because I know you're speaking with some kind of very well-known local figures.
The event that you're talking about is called Step It Up. It's a day of action. It's going to be happening across the world. It's about climate change and awareness. And there'll be a rally. The Carnival Band will be there. A lot of incredible groups will be there setting up tables. And the speaker list is awesome. Mm-hmm. It's a real honor to be on the same stage as many of these people. Libby Davies will be there. Joe Foy.
I lent Libby a DVD recently. Maybe we can get it back from her. She's a really busy lady and hard to catch.
Yeah, she's busy. Oh, and Fred Bass will be there as well.
Yes, and today, actually, Fred Bass is going to join us as well on the show, and also one of the other speakers, Karen Riston, who is affiliated with SPEC, which is, they have a fabulous, I always forget what the acronym is for, the Society for Promoting Environmental...
Conservation.
Thank you, David.
They do a lot of good work, Spec.
They do, actually, and they have a fabulous, beautiful building with a demonstration garden and all sorts of stuff, and do-it-yourself worm areas.
Yeah, climate change is becoming a very serious, it's becoming an issue that people are becoming aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like to talk about is that the rally is some of the causes of climate change. Look into energy use itself. Energy, do we have time for me to give a quick rundown?
Go for it. What the heck?
Well, energy is a good gauge to represent the amount of production and consumption that's happening in a society. And currently, the world uses and consumes around 510 quadrillion BTU, which is the unit of measure. What that is it's represented, we use that energy to build highways, to build cars, to build airplanes, to fuel those airplanes, and to build a huge assortment of consumer goods that, for the most part, just land up in landfills. Now, the estimate for the year 2030 is that we're going to be using around 659 quadrillion BTU, which is a 59% increase. A 59% increase
Wow.
in the amount of energy we're going to use. Now, remember, this translates to more highways, to more cars, to more consumer goods, to just more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are going to be serious about reducing our environmental impact, and addressing climate change, what it means is that we are going to need to start consuming less and stop being so wasteful. Canada is, according to the 2005 World Development Indicators, the world's second most wasteful nation in respect to energy consumption.
Present company excluded.
Absolutely.
For the purposes of this conversation. Yeah, it's true, though.
And if we are going to be serious about reducing our environmental footprint, it does mean that we're going to have to stop being so wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a new concept. It's a proven concept. Many nations in Europe have already adopted this approach.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I was just reading yesterday that that in North America, people spend an average in the suburbs. They spend an average of 55 8-hour days driving every year,
mm-hmm.
which is it's almost like having two jobs in a way, or at least a part-time job, moonlighting as a commuter.
Exactly.
Kind of sad.
And what I was getting at was that it's a proven technology in reducing our environmental footprint is to consume less. Europe has already adopted that in many nations. The average European will consume around 40 to 50% less energy and consumer goods than we do in North America.
I'd like to actually just get involved in the conversation. A lovely lady who's also going to be appearing with you at Step It Up, and her name is Karen Riston. She's the executive director of SPEC, and she's here with us on the line. Karen, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hello, Ebony. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Karen. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Speaking of traffic, how was your day?
Oh, Lord, I explored the furthest reaches of the GVRD today. Meetings in Surrey and Fort Langley, and now I'm off to Bowen Island.
Wow. You're making the rounds. And are you spreading good words? Is that what you're up to?
You bet I am. This has all been in pursuance of our campaign against the expansion of Highway 1 and the twinning of the Portman Bridge.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me, actually, I'd like to take the opportunity to teach everybody a little bit of Esperanto. I found out how to say gateway sucks. We are traffic in Esperanto. Anybody want to learn it? Are you
sure,
up for that?
Yeah.
Okay. So to say we, it's ni. To say estás, which means are. And so ni estás is we are. And then traffic is tráfico. So it's ni estás tráfico.
Ni estás
tráfico.
Tráfico.
Sorry, I'm being frivolous. But Karen, I wanted to ask you what you had in mind, what you're going to be speaking about this event.
Well, first of all, just a little bit about SPEC and our role in the climate change issue generally, but then the organizers have asked me to speak specifically about the Gateway Project itself and what it means for our region. So touching on some of the likely consequences of highway expansion for the region, like urban sprawl, air pollution, greenhouse gases, all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to tell people a little bit about SPEC, about what it does and what it is?
Uh-huh. We're actually Canada's oldest environmental organization. I think we beat Greenpeace to the incorporation by about 3 days.
Congratulations.
Yeah, really. We've been involved in many environmental issues over the years, but right now we're really focused on urban sustainability. So building healthy cities is what we're all about. For us, working on the climate change issue means working on it in ways that really individual citizens can make a difference on. I think you can probably now hear the ferry announcement in the background.
Yeah.
Probably not much of me. So
we didn't think you were lying, but now we know.
Well, the Langdale folks are about to get away. I'm still waiting on my ferry.
So what are some things that, I'd like to ask you what are some things that individuals can do, but I'd also like to ask you what you think a healthy city consists of.
Right. Well, when we look to climate change and ask ourselves what could individuals do, it was pretty easy to just look at the profile of greenhouse gas emissions that the average GVRD citizen generates and figure out our programs from there. So, you know, fully half of the average person's GHG emissions come from the way they transport themselves.
Hmm.
The second biggest contributor to their emissions would be the food that they eat. Where does it come from? How far has it traveled? And the third is the way we conserve or fail to conserve the energy that we use in our homes and our offices, our workplaces.
Mm-hmm.
So we developed our programs around those three things. So, you know, first and foremost, offering individuals transportation choice. And in our region, that really means getting something resembling transit south of the Fraser River. I mean, I had quite an introduction into it today, not that I haven't been down there many times before, but two meetings in places that were just not served in any way whatsoever by transit and, you know, simply couldn't be reached any other way than by car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to change for that region. It's our fastest growing region. We're going to have more people likely living in Delta, Surrey, Richmond than in the city of Vancouver within the next decade. And we can't expect them to continue to get around in single occupant vehicles the way they have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's number one. Number two is, you know, trying to help people understand what the impact of their diet has on the planet. I mean, most of our food's traveling about 2,500 kilometers to get to our plates these days. And we can make some pretty simple and easy choices to buy foods grown closer to home and to change the, you know, the mix of processed foods that we eat so that, or to reduce that mix of processed foods so that we're supporting local vendors to the greatest extent possible and local farmers particularly.
Mm-hmm. On the last show, someone made an interesting point when you're thinking about buying locally. It's also important for us to sustain local farmers because we're going to need them when and if, you know, transporting goods as an industry breaks down, you know, if we do get into a serious energy crisis, which doesn't seem to be so implausible. We need to make sure that we actually have those farmers still successful and sustained in the meantime until we actually get to the point where we don't have other choices.
Well, sure, that's critically important, and that's one of the reasons why we've been such supporters of the Agricultural Land Reserve and working hard to try to make sure that decisions aren't made in response to, you know, legitimate land pressures today that impact future generations in a negative way. You know, if we take land out of the farm base, whether it's being farmed today or not, we're making a choice to shut that land down to food production for future generations. And looking at the way fuel prices have gone even just in the past few years, I mean, forget the predictions, just look at history. It's highly unlikely that they're going to remain stable. Far more likely that we're going to see them double in the next decade. And that's going to mean severe consequences for particularly for people on lower fixed incomes trying to feed themselves in a city like this.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to ask you also kind of how you got energized or how you fell into this kind of a movement and what motivated you to become as prominent as you've become.
Well, I actually was an environmentalist from a very young age. We had a pollution probe club at our school, and I can remember being a member of that and testing the water in a creek I used to play in when I was a kid. And finding out it was laced with arsenic.
Oh, dear.
I used to drink that all the time, you know. And it was a very early recognition or realization that despite the fact that we have some environmental regulation, it's just not applied in any way that really protects people or mm-hmm. the environment at large. And so, you know, I thought, well, I'll go to law school. I'll become an environmental lawyer, which was, you know, quite naive because there was no such thing at the time. But it didn't take very long before I'd graduated law before there were environmental lawyers. They were unfortunately working for large corporations trying to protect them from environmental regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided that we needed some lawyers working on the other side for public interest groups working to protect the environment. And that's when I came out to BC and started looking for a place to do that and found Sierra Legal Defense Fund. So that was really my way into the movement.
And did you come from the East? Did you come from Ontario?
Yeah, I came from Toronto, you know.
Okay, just like everybody else in Vancouver. What do you think are the challenges that are unique to British Columbia?
Well, you know, it wasn't so much the challenges that were unique to British Columbia that brought me here. It was the relative position of the environmental movement. Here, things were quite polarized already, and litigation tends to be a tool that's used more often when groups are polarized than when they're not. And because that was my main skill, I thought best to go where it's needed. I think that the dependence of this economy on its resource base is perhaps the best answer to your question, what are the unique challenges? We don't have the diversification that would allow us a little bit of room to negotiate. We just depend so heavily on those primary extractive industries.
Wow. Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time to get a hold of us. I know that, you know, you're a busy person, and it's almost like the work itself is endless. And I'd like to encourage you back anytime.
Well, thanks so much, Tiffany. I appreciate it.
Cool. Well, listen, drive safe and enjoy your ferry ride.
Thanks, and see you Saturday, Conrad.
See ya.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
She's lovely.
The last time I interviewed her, she was also getting on the ferry.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, it's nice. And it's funny because we were talking earlier today about Langley traffic, and I had to be in Langley a few days ago. And it's quite shocking in some ways to see what someone's vision of a livable human neighborhood is when, you know, it's very divorced from the natural kind of growth of communities. And, you know, it was right beside the highway. There was like a row of houses that all looked alike, and they were very much planted next to the huge strip mall with ample parking. And at the same time, you know, the probability of those people who move into those homes knowing their neighbors is very, very low. There's a movie that's actually coming out. It's playing now, and it's going to be closing tomorrow night. I encourage people to go and check it out. I'm just going to pull up the listings for that. But before we do that, it's called Radiant City, and it's playing at the Van City Theater. It's about it's a documentary about suburbs, but it was shot in Calgary. Actually, they never say Calgary in the movie, but if people are interested in going to see that, it's done quite cheekily, and there's some really interesting visuals to it. I see Justin and a baby. Hey, come on in, Justin. We're in here. He's got a mouth full of food. That's cute. So anyway, that's playing at the Van City Theater until April the 12th, and on April the 13th, I have heard a rumor that it will actually start playing again at Empire Granville 7. So if people want to go and check that out, you can find its listing on Best, which is the Best calendar. That would be calendar.best.bc.ca. And let's just reiterate again where you guys are speaking. You're going to be appearing at the Vancouver Art Gallery.
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock, home to Critical Mass. And that's going to be 11 till 2, Saturday, April the 14th. And again, that's Georgia Street at Hornby. So there's going to be Karen Riston appearing there, Fred Bass. He's a preventative medicine physician and former city councilor. He's actually going to be, we're going to be talking to him on the phone later today. Conrad Schmidt, founder of the Workless Party. And there's going to be the Carnival Band.
And the Carnival Band is always a party by itself.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's go to a song, and we'll be right back. We're going to play a song now called When the Floods Come by MC Lynx.
Good.
Night sky, deep blue, not a star in sight. Just the clouds in the sky reflect back the light. Street lamps and headlights, pinpoints of brilliance to mimic the stars that they've hidden, the resilience of the natural world that stretch past breaking. And when I touch the ground, I feel the earth shaking. We're riding the whirlwind, breathing devastation. And how much longer can we stay complacent? It's one thing to sell ourselves out of fear, and another to sell the whole world. Didn't you hear? The ice caps are melting, oceans are rising. When I look at this mess, y'all, I'm realizing it won't be long until we're living underwater. And you think that we
hated on sons and daughters, cause we're selling their future to the money machine. It's just the tip of the iceberg out of New Orleans. When the floods come, where you gonna run? What you doing? When the floods come, how you gonna cope with this ruin? When the floods come, how you gonna feed your children? When the floods come, assuming that the waters haven't drowned them. This ain't exaggeration, it's reality. The way that we're living is causing these fatalities. I mean, here and now, I've lived in these streets where poor people freeze to death. And the beat that I'm hearing in my sleep is a war drum pounding. At war with the earth, and it's simply astounding. We're drowning in luxury, financed on debt, enslaving the nations around us. And yet, over half of Americans say they're depressed, sick of their meaningless lives and the quest for conspicuous consumption, bulimic brutality. To eat the whole earth if we let it. In reality, most of us would rather have time for our family, spend our whole lives trying to earn a salary. But the rat race we're living in won't let us relax until the floods wash it all away in a flash. When the floods come and all the clocks just stop. When the floods come and you can't rely on the cops. When the floods come, wash away the lies you believe. When the floods come, will you be scared or relieved? Do you know your neighbors? Do they got your back? And will you work together when you're under attack? Or will it all dissolve into each for themselves? Murder and rape and God's know what else. Will you fight for each other like anarchists? Or will you prey on each other like capitalists? It's up to you, up to me, up to all of us together. When the floods come, it's more than just bad weather. It's the direct result of the lives that we're living, the way that we treat each other with derision. We allow corporations to pollute with impunity and clear cut the forests, colonize communities. A culture that would rather drive fancy cars and breathe clean air or look at the stars. Global empire built on destruction, the way we consume like we had no other function. When the floods come, all we can trust is each other. When the floods come, we better learn to share with one another. When the floods come, it's up to us to set right the scene. When the floods come, so I'll be in the streets with my people.
Whatever we could do, we gonna do, especially in continuing to preserve this earth and protecting it from all of these exploitative, avaricious pigs that don't care nothing about Mother Earth.
Mother Earth. Mother Earth. Mother Earth. Mother Earth.
On the last Friday of the month, the territorial mating call of the indigenous local cyclists is heard echoing through downtown Vancouver. Thousands of cyclists have once again reclaimed the streets and scared belligerent motorists. But now, you wonder what is next. The night is too young, and you're feeling a little frisky. After all, there are only so many car tires you can peel in a day. Well, we have the solution. Velofusion Bicycle Dance Party. Burlesque, bands, dancing, DJs, and pirated movies. The last Friday of the month after Critical Mass. Come one, come all for a little primal rowdiness. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. The Answer Club.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Pedal Revolutionary Show, 101.9 FM on CITR. It's an interesting afternoon. We got a lot of people dropping in and out. And hello, Justin. How you doing?
Hi there, Ifni. I'm doing just fine.
I see you have a miniature person with you.
Yeah, this is Lily right here. She's our youngest radio star. Do you have anything to say, Lily? she has that brook trout look, you know, you kind of shine a light in brook trout and they just stare there and swim at you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were a fish charmer.
Yeah. Well, among other things.
And who are you again, Justin?
I am Justin. I am a scientist and I work for the federal government, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you tend to look at that.
That's okay. We need men on the inside.
Yeah, I work on fuel cell research and alternative energy.
Yeah. Well, when you say scientist, you should see if you can cackle. That'll be really, yeah, exactly, just like that. Before we go on with our regular business, I'd just like to announce a couple more events. One is a great thing happening out on Vancouver Island, speaking of ferries. That's going to be the Bike Prom Ride and Party, and that's this is a kind of a weekend fundraiser for the Recyclistas / Bike Lab, and so if folks want to go out there, it's going to be a great event. There's going to be a bicycle-inspired art show, race, rides, there's going to be dance troupes, live music, costumes, food, and one heck of a prom. So if you want information about that, you should go to the Recyclistas website. That's going to be that's www.recyclistas.com. recyclists.ca, and that'll have information for you at the bottom. And again, that's April the 27th to Wednesday, May the 2nd. Speaking of the Step It Up event coming up on the 14th, we do actually have another of the speakers there to give us a little bit of a preview, the one and only infamous bicycle riding Fred Bass. Fred, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here.
Excellent. You survived yet another rush hour unscathed.
Oh, yes.
Yep. How are you doing today?
Fine, thanks. Yeah, I just came back from downtown along the Burrard, on the Broad Expressway, the Bicycle Expressway, and passing all the cars.
It's, yes.
Great fun, except when the buses come within inches of you on the right.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's so, how you know you're alive.
Oh, yes. So we're going to be at the Step Up program, and I don't know if people are aware, but this is going to happen all across North America. Basically, it's springtime, and North America is going to bloom in recognition of global warming into at least 100 or so demonstrations across the U.S. and several in Canada.
That's lovely imagery. And are people kind of doing things in the same way that we're doing them in Vancouver, kind of a bit of a party and some speaking and things like that?
I can't speak across the U.S., but I think there's going to be a lot of celebration.
Right. And the message is here that governments should roll up their sleeves and that it's time to take really real action to combat climate change. What are you going to be speaking about, Fred?
Well, what I'm going to be speaking about is, number one, I think that we have to reach not the converted, but the people who are ready to step forward. And I think the way we do that is to recognize the core values that that doing something about climate change represents. And those core values include things like valuing children and the children of the future, valuing what Canada is about, and that is about being fair to people across the community and treasuring the wild resources that we have and the wonderful ecosystems that we have. And I like to think that what global warming is really about is doing what your grandmother would do. Being conservative of resources, of money, being efficient, and connecting in a basic way, as opposed to consuming.
Mm-hmm. I think Conrad would agree with you on there. It's interesting, I ran across some propaganda posters from the 1940s, the mid-1940s, encouraging people to recycle and conserve, but of course they were war-driven at the time.
Yes.
And it's so interesting that it took so long for us, for the rest of us, to kind of catch up with that or to reintroduce it from a grassroots level.
Yes. Now, I was alive during the Second World War. I've been around a while. I'm recycling myself, as a matter of fact. And I remember what it was like to live in a mobilized society. This is one of the things I'm going to talk about tomorrow. And this that we live in now is not a mobilized society. We have to behave as if this is serious and as if we can do something about it, because we can. So I think what's new in this area, would you hold on one second, please?
Yes. Everybody hold on. Fred's coming back. Hi, Fred.
Yeah, hi, I'm back. What's near, clear to a lot of people, not to enough people, but to a lot of people, is that you can't change the climate without having social justice. Because for this simple, selfish reason that we can do all we want in North America or North America and Europe, and we're still a minority of the people on the planet. So we have to make it really clear that we're interested in everybody's welfare, and we're interested in preserving the planet and having ecosystems for our children or grandchildren, but also we want social justice for everybody. We want fairness. And I think that that message is beginning to come across.
I'm really interested to hear what about this idea of a mobilized society. Can you describe what that experience was like, and can you describe what some of the hallmarks of it, of living in a mobilized society, would be?
Well, I think number one is you see visual images. You hear things that remind you, hey, we have to get something done here. So we have to plant victory gardens. We have to recycle metal, rubber, paper. We have to put our energy together to do things like grow victory gardens. You know, a lot of the stuff that was done during the Second World War is exactly the same kind of thing we need to do now.
Hey, and this is Justin, and I just have a question. I mean, what sort of urgency is required with this, and what sort of vigor should we actually and energy should we be expending towards these means, in your opinion?
I think this is an emergency. I think we have 10 years to really turn around our production of CO2. We have 10 years to have global CO2 go down instead of up, and that requires huge effort, a very different frame of reference than what we are living through, and also great diplomatic skills in terms of how we relate to our fellow countries like China and India, the African countries, and even the European countries. So, to answer your question, you see, one of the things I'm going to put up on my website, and I'll mention that, Dr. Fred Bass, drfredbass.ca, is I'm going to have some of those posters from the Second World War. So you would see that kind of imagery. You would, one of the famous sayings from that era was, is this trip necessary?
I love it.
Yeah. Is that new to you?
Well, excellent. I love that. And David wanted to ask you a question as well.
Sure.
David Ripa is here in the studio with us.
Fred, you were talking about the victory gardens in during World War II,
yeah.
And just the unity that everybody had against Hitler and Nazi Germany at that time. Why do you think today we don't have that same unity, that same bonding feeling that there's a menace out there, global warming, we need to fight it? Why can't we have that same feeling we had in World War II?
Well, for one thing, we're fighting a war now. At least North America is involved in fighting a wrong war. I mean, we're fighting the wrong war. The war should be against global warming. And who's the enemy of global warming?
Us.
That's right. You know, there used to be a cartoon character. Oh, his name will come back to me. But he was kind of like an opossum. And he said, "We have met the enemy, and they is us." And so it's not just us individually. It's the consumptive way we do business, the way we use our resources, use space, use cars. And it's really somewhat, it's ignorance of the satisfaction and the benefits of living in a different way. For example, I sold my car in 2003.
Yay.
And I'm on my bike. And my bank account has never been healthier.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'm going to say tomorrow is, who out there wants $500 more per month of your money? Who out there wants to cut back their CO2 consumption by 1.2 tons? And there'll be quite a few people who raise their hands. I say, well, if you're not a member of the car co-op, you better join, because that's exactly the benefits that you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
500 after-tax dollars a month and 1.2 megatons over the year. There's a lot of stuff that we believe, that we think is necessary, that actually is almost the opposite of what a much more optimal lifestyle is like. I'm a preventive medicine physician by trade, and I can tell you a lot of the diabetes, a lot of the overweight, a lot of the hypertension, a lot of the osteoarthritis that we see comes from gasoline. It comes from asking cars to do something that we could do with our bodies. So there's not only an ecological benefit to doing some of these things. There's not only a dollar benefit for doing some of these things, but there is a health benefit.
Mm-hmm. It's true, and it's kind of like trying to calculate the value of a forest. It's one of those things that's very hard, I think, to qualify, to quantify. But there's a novel that I read, and it's kind of a magic realist book, and in it all of the cars suddenly stop working, with the exception of some of the commercial trucks that deliver food. And they talk about how all of these older people who had been previously isolated to their homes and suffering from just exactly, as you say, conditions like osteoporosis, suddenly started to kind of be mobile again and re-enter society again. And that's kind of one of the more realistic aspects of the whole book, getting people out on the streets and getting them involved with one another again.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And you know, when I'm cycling across Vancouver in some odd part of town that I'm not usually in, I realize how much being out there as a pedestrian or as a cyclist adds to the security of the area. You know, you're there, you're able to help somebody, you can say hello to people. You can't do that in a car. A car not only weakens you physically, but also socially and psychologically.
I wanted to ask you too, Fred, just about, and this is something that I'm very curious with people about. I'd like to ask you kind of how you got involved in ecological matters. I mean, you have maybe a very unique perspective in that it's a far longer one than a lot of people have, I think, who are involved in the movement. So if it's a movement, I don't know what to call it.
It better be a movement.
It's better a movement.
Be a movement. Is it a wave? Can we call it
a wave?
Well,
no, there's a book called The Sustainability Revolution, and I think that's what we have to pull off. And there are a lot of people who are interested in making this happen. They don't see the same perspectives that maybe you or I do, but I just came from a Board of Trade meeting that was on global warming and what the companies who are members of the Board of Trade can do. And that it was quite impressive. There's a 10-item checklist there that said who has done 9 of these 10 things, and not too many people stood up. But this is a revolution. This is going to be bigger, actually, than the Industrial Revolution.
Right.
It better be.
Well, and it's a rolling back to a certain extent to things that were destroyed during the Industrial Revolution. Things to do with, for example, maybe artisanship or craftsmanship, craftspersonship, community where you could, where work was close to your home, and all these really radical ideas that we're recapturing. So I guess, did you just kind of fall into things naturally, this awareness that a lot of your peers, I'm sure, didn't share, if they ever shared, but, you know.
Well, in 1989-90, I'd always been interested in the environment, always admired the wilderness of British Columbia and the wonderful ecosystems we have here. And I thought I'd love to be on the Clouds of Change task force that Councillor Gordon Price had put together that was looking at global climate change. And so every Saturday we met for more than a year, for about a year and a half. And when I saw the CO2 curve, I'm a physician, okay? I also have a Master of Science in Epidemiology and a Doctor of Science in Epidemiology. And when I saw the CO2 curve, after looking at figures and tables and numbers my whole life, I thought, oh, my God, that has to be taken seriously.
How did that come your way, Fred? How did you encounter it?
Well, I asked to be on that task force.
Oh, okay.
I'm a preventive medicine physician. I thought, well, it's about time I do something in the environment. Let me see if I can join. And Gordon Price was very friendly and said, why don't you come on board?
Excellent.
And so we had a lot of technical background, and one of the things we had then was the CO2 curve, and that made me a believer.
Right, and that, of course, for folks who haven't seen it, it's a rising zigzag.
Well, actually, if you look at what's happened since 1950, it's a very steepward climbing curve. You see it in Gore's book. And we actually have gone from about 252 to 350 just between 1950 58 and now.
Yeah, so basically completely unprecedented levels that we've never ever seen before, and indisputable, like it's just indisputable that this stuff has skyrocketed. Well, listen, Fred, it's been lovely to talk to you, and I look forward to hearing what you guys have to say on the 14th of April down at the Art Gallery between 11 and 2, and I hope to also see you on the road, and I know I've seen you on Critical Mass, so I look forward to rubbing elbows with you on the bike routes.
May I close with one last thing?
Absolutely.
Okay, one is there's some money to be made from being responsible with global climate change. The Cooperative Auto Network is one very, very major way.
Mm-hmm.
If choosing food that takes less energy to produce is another way. I've become mm-hmm. a vegetarian over the last year,
mm-hmm.
and I know that I'm eating food that takes a fraction of the energy that meat takes. And the third thing is, when in doubt, think of your grandmother. Think of what she would have done.
It's so funny because we were talking earlier with Karen from Spec, and she was echoing that. I love this idea of really committing to and reconnecting with something that, in a sense, possibly the generation gap tore away, or industry tore away, or just misguided kind of, I don't know. It's really nice to hear those words. Thank you so much.
Ifni, thank you very much.
You have a great day, Fred. See you later.
Bye for now.
Wow, that was nice. I've only met one of my grandmothers, but I think I can fill in the blanks for the other one.
My grandmother grew up in Kentucky, and she raised a farm, and she grew all of her own food for 20 years and lived in a trailer and ate everything that she grew and didn't require an outside store, and I was amazed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that maternal or paternal?
That is maternal.
Wow.
I used to think she was poor when I was a kid, and I thought, oh, she's so poor. But now when I look back in retrospect, she was so much richer beyond what I ever even imagined.
And she was so much smarter than the rest of us. Well, lovely. Listen, let's play a brief song, and then we're actually going to get Derek Jensen into the studio virtually over telephonic communication. So let's listen to a song called The Long Emergency by Pogo Park.
There's been so much change for 6 short years. I guess fear can make the end of your rope real near. My name is Pogo, I can't go home to a city for the fishing sequence. It's a new Rome sequence. See, it's like this, it wasn't just sidekicks. 2021 of this American life is Richie Rich moving south and up. The rest of us working stocks, trying to fill our cups. There's no shortage of villains, but who can we blame? The gang killers, the dang gorillas, the cops? Nah, there's a shame that takes the fun out of that game. Who did this to us? Well, who did not? We could dream ahead. Yo, I definitely cared, but I guess I never really thought I'd feel the same despair. But then the tide started rising, and so did the fear. Swing low, sweet chariot, yo, take me away from here, I swear. I started praying in earnest, surprised by the gift that every second on earth is. Every sunrise, I'm struck down these days, almost as hard as when we get the news relays. Like Cape Cod and odd set of refugees screaming rescue me desperately. And eventually this time FEMA sent Humvees, and nobody can front on their true priorities. From New York City, the reports are beyond shitty. Where you gonna move 3 million heads in a jiffy? Inland families try to spend man cents to feed them. Meanwhile, they own bottom lines taking a beating. Boston's gone, so there's no fish for eating. Boston swamped, a desperate situation peaking. Providence barely holding its makeshift levees. Getting anxious cause the crazed and desperate are descending. Welcome to the future, fuck a flying car. I'd be super souped about a rocket ship to Mars. It's ironic, see me finally found our rage. Yo, so what goes, welcome to the new ice age. Getting down in this long emergency. Getting down with this long emergency. Good luck finding something to make you feel patriotic. If you think too far ahead, you'll probably break psychotic. Cause most jobs these days are going robotic. Red hats are white, yo, it's the life aquatic. Most of the pop charades died in 21-5, and I bet they're still alive. I'm stabbing at their eyes. See, I saw a violent mob throwing rocks at Bill O'Reilly, screaming at their lungs, all you just told lies to me. And yes, it's hard to window dress the complete collapse of what was once greatest. But don't stress, I eat and breathe it, smoke it, distill it, at least I'm self-defeated. Might as well delete the fragments of the old government, cause even those with no sense know there's no help being sent. So we just soldier on, scratch and pound a cracked pavement, recalling when we used to wonder where the days went.
And now the water's rising faster and faster towards disaster. Freedom's quickly starting to seem like something to grasp for. So many peeps purchase in denial, it seems. So many put on trial behind constructed scenes designed to mask injustice and other signs of mass disruption of the old politics and nothing important. Old fat cats still trying to work it, but any fool can look around and see that shit isn't worth it. And the arc of history, we only seem to get further from bliss, which means we ain't halfway yet. And I ain't the wisest, but I'm tired of taking back the steps. Just bury my baby, and who knows what's next. It's getting cold, I'm packing my backpack for warmer climates. Heading south towards certain violence. It's Pogo Park signing off. Hope I survive the day, though to be honest, I'm not that partial either way. Getting down in this long emergency. Getting down with this long emergency.
And welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM out at the beautiful and decadent west of Vancouver. We're just going to talk to Derek Jensen. We've got him on the line. And Justin, did you want to just kind of give people an idea of what we're getting ourselves into?
Well, Derek Jensen is an incredible author, a philosopher. He's a small-time farmer. He's a long-time activist in the environmental movement. And he has some very persuasive arguments, and I have found him very inspiring. And I encourage everybody to seek out some of his works, specifically in game. And he's going to be in Vancouver next week on Wednesday and at Garrett College. And I highly recommend people going to hear his compelling message.
Excellent. So, Derek, are you there and can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
How are you doing? Pardon me?
I said, I can hear you great. Thanks for having me.
Oh,
can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. We have a baby in the studio with us today, and she's providing some ambiance.
Great.
So can you tell us a little bit about, if you'd like to add anything to what Justin said, and if you'd like to give us an idea of what you think the biggest problems are that we should be thinking about and dealing with.
Well, I think that the biggest problems that we should be thinking about and dealing with is the fact that this culture is killing the planet. And that's, we can talk about whatever measure you want. You know, 90% of the large fish in the oceans are gone. There's, 6 times as much plastic as phytoplankton in the oceans at this point. There's dioxin in every mother's breast milk. You know, salmon are getting hammered. You know, it's whatever measure you want, this culture's not working, and it hasn't been working for a very, very long time. I mean, the Talua, I live on Talua land, Talua Indians, and they lived here for 12,500 years, if you believe the myths of science, and if you believe the myths of the Talua, then they lived here since the beginning of time, without destroying a place. And this culture's been here a couple hundred years, and it's absolutely hammered. And so that's, you know, with all the world at stake, you'd think that we would ask, what is it about this culture that is causing it to do all this? And then another thing that's really important about all this is that I think that most of us, I mean, this culture makes us fundamentally insane, and we can talk about that in greater detail. You know, I'm hearing a little scratchy thing, so I'm going to switch phones.
Okay.
Hold on.
Everybody wait.
Okay,
Derek,
I'm right
will
here.
Be coming back.
The scratchy
Hi, Derek.
Things will not hurt you.
Anyway, so can you hear me okay?
That's actually so much better. It's like you're here sitting on my lap.
Oh,
please
good.
Continue.
have to push the baby out of the way.
Well, the baby's sitting on Justin's lap.
Okay, so there's plenty of room.
Okay, absolutely.
So another problem is, like I said, that we're fundamentally insane, by which I mean out of touch with reality, and there's a bunch of ways we can talk about that. One of them is that I know who Angelina Jolie is and Brad Pitt is and Anna Nicole Smith, yet it took me a couple years of living where I do to learn that there was a massacre of Talua about 2 miles from where I live. And, you know, I know that Pedro Martinez is out until after the All-Star break, but I can't name 10 species of edible plants and fungi within 100 yards of my home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, in terms of being out of touch with reality, that's one part of it. Another part, one of the reasons this is really important is because if you think about all the solutions, quote, end quote, that are presented by about global warming, the thing that they all do is they take industrial civilization as a given, as opposed to the land base as a given. They all take, okay, how are we going to basically keep this culture going and tinker with it. And I ran into a really bad example of this a few weeks ago when I got interviewed by some right-wing anti-environmentalist property rights uber allahs kind of radio interview out of Santa Barbara. And I was talking about 90% of large fish are gone and salmon getting hammered and backs of mother's breast milk and all that. And what he kept saying to me is, come on, Derek, let's get back to the real world.
Let's talk about his mortgage.
I'm sorry?
He wanted to talk about his mortgage?
Well, he did want to talk about his dream home on the river.
Oh, that was close. Okay,
and
great.
Yeah, exactly. And the real world for him, it's like, you know, college students. I mean, how many times have college students heard somebody say, what are you going to do when you get out in the real world? Mm. Well, frankly, when I get out in the real world, I'm going to roll around in the dirt, you know? Mm. That's the real world. So part of the problem is we have forgotten what is real. And this is crucial because, you know, the measure by which we'll be judged by those who come after, and then I'll shut up, the measure by which we'll be judged by those who come after, they're not going to care, you know, whether we recycle. They're not going to care whether we were nice people. They're not going to care whether we voted, you know, liberal, conservative, green, whatever. What they're going to care about is if they can drink the water and breathe the air. I have a new slogan, which is, protect your land base. You can't have sex without it. And what I mean by that is without a land base, you don't have anything. Without a land base, you don't have life. And it's so obvious I'm embarrassed to say it, but there it is.
And it's got sex in it. It's catchy.
Yeah,
I commend
yeah.
you.
So I have a question, Derek. So what is it? I mean, this is all pretty obvious and basic stuff. I mean, from a humanistic standpoint, what is it going to take to contextualize this to people? I mean, if 90% of the fish being gone from the ocean and CO2 and global warming and all of these indicators are coming back, yet people still want to earn more money so they can live a more opulent lifestyle. I mean, what is it going to take from a realistic standpoint before people actually wake up? I mean, is it going to have to be the destruction of the planet? Is it going to have to be mass starvation and migration? And I mean, you can argue that that's happening now.
Yeah, of course it is. And you know, depending on your perspective, if you're a subsistence farmer in Bangladesh or India, it's happening. And if you're, you know, a shark, you know, the Holocaust is already here. And if you're a passenger pigeon, the Holocaust was 100 years ago. That's what this culture does. And so far as what it'll take, you know, how close does it have to get? I mean, do you know people who died of cancer? When I'm at my talks, I ask people, how many of you have had someone you love die of cancer? And about 80% say yes. I have had people I love die of cancer. And, of course, cancer is a disease of this culture. I mean, they try to tell us there's some cancer gene, but do you think the toxification of the total environment could have something to do with it? And then there's something else that's really, really important here, which is Zygmunt Bauman wrote this great book called Modernity and the Holocaust. And in there, he talks about how at every step of the way, it was in the Jews' rational best interest to not resist. So, and the Nazis mm-hmm. did this on purpose. It was very, very smart.
It's a gradual increments of oppression.
Exactly. Mm. And so what Zygmunt Bauman said is, rational people will go quietly, meekly into a gas chamber if only you allow them to believe it's a bathroom. And I would say the same thing, that rational people go quietly, meekly to the end of the world if only you allow them to believe that buying compact fluorescence is going to save the day.
So,
our
Derek,
capacity for denial is huge.
Mm. I'd like to ask you then what we should do. Besides, like, take off all our clothes and run around screaming and take what we want if we can get it, you know.
Well, the way that I sign my book Endgame these days when people ask me for a signature is find what you love and defend your beloved. And I think that that's really crucial. And another thing I think that people can and should do, there's three things. One is that. Another is this question that Carolyn Raffensperger gave to me, which is, what are the largest, most pressing problems that you can help to solve using the gifts that are unique to you and all the world? And I love that because, you know, people have tried to convince me, gosh, Derek, you should quit writing and be an organizer or something. I'm not an organizer. I'm a writer. You know, and it would be silly for me to, I mean, I do activism, but it's like filing timber sale appeals. You know, I filed bunches of them, and I'm terrible at it. I mean, I can do it, but it just makes my brain hurt, and it takes me forever. And I have friends who can just, you know, they pop open an environmental impact statement, bloop, 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 and they've figured out where the Forest Service is lying. And me, it takes me hours. Once again, I've done it, but it's not fun for me, and it's fun for them. And then the next thing, the third thing, is that I always tell people, when people ask me what we should do, I always say, don't listen to me, because I don't know how to live sustainably. Mm. What you should do is go, what's the nearest river to where you are right now?
The Fraser.
Fraser. What I would suggest you do then is go out to the Fraser and ask it what you should do, because the Fraser has lived there for a very long time, and it knows how to live on that land. And so if you ask it, it will tell you what to do. So that's what I suggest, is people just start listening to the natural world.
It reminds me a lot of a
and then fight back.
And then fight back. Okay, well, tell me about that. Before
about
I
what?
About fighting back.
Well, it's I sometimes get labeled as, you know, the violence guy or something, and that really bugs me because I don't know very many people who are more inclusive of tactics than I am. Mm-hmm. I think that what we need to do, I mean, that's one of the great things about everything being so messed up is that no matter where you look, there's really great work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if your deal is protecting women, then, you know, work for a battered women's shelter or something like that, or a rape crisis hotline. If your deal is salmon, then work for salmon. And then the next question is, well, that's okay. The first question is, what do we want? I mean, that's a really important question that I don't think a lot of environmentalists want. Do we want smaller clear cuts, kinder clear cuts, gentler clear cuts?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've thought about this a lot, and I'm really clear on what I want, which is I want to live in a world that has wild salmon, and that has more wild salmon every year than the year before, and a world that has more migratory songbirds every year than the year before. And so that's the first question is, what do you want? And the second question is, how are you going to get there? And like people say, how are we going to save the salmon? And that's never what they really mean. What they really mean is, how are we going to save the salmon without removing dams or stopping industrial forestry or industrial logging? I mean, industrial logging or industrial fishing or blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it's really simple what salmon need to survive. They need six things. They need for dams to be removed. They need for industrial logging to stop, industrial fishing to stop. I'm not saying fishing to stop. I'm saying industrial fishing.
Mm-hmm.
They need for industrial agriculture to stop because of runoffs and also fish farms. They need for the oceans not to be murdered. And they need for global warming to stop. And it's pretty straightforward. You know, what do grizzly bears need? They need habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And so then let's just start breaking it down. You know, what do you want? And then what will it take? And, you know, people say, once again, what will it take for salmon to survive? It's not cognitively challenging unless you take this culture as a given. And then once you start looking at it that way, it's like, okay, what will it take? And where do my loyalties lie? And that's not code language for just blowing up dams. That's code language for doing whatever is appropriate in this situation, which could be anything, including, you know, filing lawsuits. It could even include voting, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's interesting because what you said about listening again to the natural world reminded me of a sound workshop that I took in the countryside in Japan, and we basically it was an experimental workshop, and we brought a bunch of just kind of objects that we'd found to make sound with. But the first thing we did was lie out in the middle of the forest and listen to nothing for half an hour, ostensibly nothing, but actually it enabled us to then be aware of the sounds that we then proceeded to make. And without that kind of clearing out of, you know, the hum of what we are accustomed to seeing and what we, in a sense, don't even see anymore or hear anymore, white noise and all these things, it's really hard to actually know what alignment you should be in.
Well, two things. One is that John A. Livingston, who unfortunately died within the past year or so, wrote this great book, The Fallacy of Wildlife Conservation. One of the things he talks about in there is that you know, people talk about cities as being, you get to go there and you get sensory overload. And he says that's not true at all, because the truth is, everything that you're perceiving is of human origin or mediation. I mean, at any moment, I mean, any of the listeners to this, how many of the sounds you're hearing, how many of the sights you see, how many of the smells you're smelling, how many of those right now are from something or someone other than a human? And one of the things that that does, Johnny Livingston says, and I agree, is it makes it's as though we're living in an echo chamber. And when you're in an echo chamber, you start to go insane, that you start to believe that these others don't really exist. And it makes so much sense. He says that most of our ideologies are hallucinations, and I really believe that. And the other thing I was going to say is that the fundamental difference, all of my indigenous friends tell me, that the fundamental difference between Western and indigenous ways of being is that even the most open-minded Westerners generally view listening to the natural world as a metaphor as opposed to the way the world really works.
Hmm.
You know, in my talks, in my books, I talk about, you know, the tree told me this. And I don't mean that metaphorically. That is my experience of the world. And, you know, all these others are talking to us all the time. And, you know, it's a huge, huge thing because there's this great line by a Canadian lumberman, and people are getting like the 20-minute version of my talk here. There's a great line by a Canadian lumberman.
Well, we're going to have to wrap it up soon, but yeah, if you have a closing word, that would be lovely.
Okay. There's a great line by a Canadian lumberman. When I look at trees, I see dollar bills. And if when you look at trees, you see dollar bills, that's how you're going to treat them. And if when you look at trees, you see trees, you'll treat them another way. And if when you look at this particular tree, you'll treat it and you see this particular tree, you'll treat it differently still. That's true all across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, R.D. Lang wrote this great book, The Politics of Experience, in which he talks about how we perceive the world and how we experience the world influences how we behave in the world, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the important things, is for us to start getting away from this notion, from stop believing, you asked me what we should do. Once again, all my indigenous friends tell me the first thing we need to do is decolonize our hearts and minds, to start to recognize that this culture isn't good, that progress isn't good, that civilization isn't good. It's been a big blight on the planet.
Well, excellent.
Once you start
Listen,
to recognize those, everything starts to change.
That's lovely, Derek, for taking the time to speak with us and get some of your speech for your talk for free.
Yeah.
I know you've given us much more than we had asked for, and I really appreciate you taking the time. I'll just let everyone know again, Derek Jensen is going to be speaking coming up at Langara College. That'll be that's 100 West 19th Avenue. That's coming up Wednesday, April the 18th at 7 p.m. And so if you want more information, you can call 604-253-6281. And thank you so much again, Derek. Take care of yourself. So excellent. Again, if anyone needs information about some of the events that we were mentioning, you didn't get stuff written down, you can send an email to pedalrevolutionary@gmail.com. One other thing I'd like to mention that's coming up is in addition to the to Critical Mass in Vancouver, there's going to be a Critical Mass happening up in Roberts Creek, which is great. It's a Critical Mass and Bike Film Night. If you want more information about that, you can go to best.bc.ca, and that's going to be 5:30 Mass, 7 o'clock will be films, and then from 8:30 to 10 after dark films. There is a backpackers hotel and things like that. So again, that's best.bc.ca. Thank you very much, everyone. Ride your bikes. Take care of each other, and we'll see you next time.
White is a tool that was made by a nation to justify slavery and colonization. Divide up the world into an us and a them, the primitive animal savage and the civilized human. Race is a story we're told, embedded deep in the brain. They call it natural order, but it's socially ingrained. Systematic exploitation by division of the people into some were made as slaves to serve the ones created equal. The first thing they conquer is their own people's minds. The colonizers, the first one to be colonized. We're born with pale skin and they tell us we're white. Playing some limp in darkness and this child will walk in light. What color is God in our pictures? And what is the color of sin? If two came to your door, one pale, one dark-skinned, who'd be the first one that you would let in? Shame hangs his head, guilt tries to run. Complicity demands we undo what's been done. Name our history, find the courage to rise. Shout it out loud with bold, angry cries. No more white lies. We're the wealthiest nation on earth, so they say. Where did this wealth come from? So the labor of slaves, all those who suffered and toiled and died, feeding the hunger of rich white man's pride. Who works in our orchards, who picks our fine crops, who sweats in our sweatshops, who pushes the mops, who rots in our prisons for the crime of their skin, who dies in our wars so that others can win, who lived here before us, and who stole their land, and who are the heroes of customs. Just the beginning.
listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Becky filling in for, well, whoever used to fill in for this spot. No one actually has a show here. It's just about 6:10, and I will be here until 7:30, so that's about 80 minutes of me. You just heard The Reasonable Men, their song Pay Back Ben, from their self-titled. We talked a lot about them last week because their UBC band, 4 out of 5 of them, are students here, and they are probably all at Arts County Fair, which is what's going on today. Before that, we heard This Is Just the Beginning from Gruff Rise, his album Candyline, and I just thought I'd put that in because really it's just the beginning of my show. We've got a lot of time, not that much to do, as is what happens when classes end. We've got Alex in studio to my left, who apparently doesn't want to say hi.
Hi.
And yeah, he and I are both skipping out on Arts County Fair today. If we were there, however, I'm sure we'd be having a wonderful time. But the sun is almost out and the weather's almost warm, so it seemed right for both of us to just be outside. I hit up the beach. He's heading there later. You should too. And, well, we missed Land of Talk, but luckily we can play them on the radio.